Welcome and thank you for coming to the opening plenary of Rebuilding the Left. My name is Joyce Noble. I'm a member of the organizing committee that put together this conference, and I'm going to be acting as chair of tonight's plenary. I will start by telling you a little bit about us, the committee, and our vision of the conference. We're a group of about 20 people. We've been together for about the last 8 months. And we specifically came together around the challenge that Sam Gindin presented a couple of years ago in an article that he published in This Magazine about the need to create a structured movement against capitalism. The committee grew and evolved, changed, took on ballast, let off steam. It was sometimes quite a tortured process as we tried to figure out issues of representation. What are the first steps in coming together to have this conversation together? Who should be here? Who should be the speakers? Suffice it to say that we struggled. What we came up with and what we hope that we've done here over this next 2 days is to create a space for all of us to think together about the way forward. We, the committee, don't have a collective agenda or a proposal to put forward to you. 20 people cannot determine how best to create a movement which will necessarily require the participation of thousands of people who are not yet represented here. The goal of the organizers has been to create a space for listening, for talking, for struggling to think new and bold thoughts, to work together, to reclaim our excitement and our commitment to build the kind of relationships with each other which can be the foundation for a movement to end capitalism. We've structured the discussion around two main themes. The first, linking anti-oppression and anti-capitalism, obligates us to understand and to confront the ways in which oppressions like racism, sexism, homophobia, ableism, and the like have operated not just out there, but amongst us, undermining our efforts to build a true anti-capitalist movement. Building on this theme, we'll take up the question of how to build a movement which is non-sectarian, inclusive, democratic, anti-capitalist, and determined to achieve the liberation of all people from all forms of oppression. It will have to be a movement which is different from anything any of us have ever seen before. Tonight's panelists are going to expand on these two themes in ways that I hope will excite you and kickstart your thinking for tomorrow's workshops. So here's tonight's agenda. We're going to hear from all four of our speakers, and then I'll open it up for discussion from the floor. At the end of that discussion, I'll give the speakers one last opportunity to respond to anything or make final comments based on what they've heard coming from the floor. And then I will provide us with a little bit more information and direction about what's going to happen tomorrow. Our first speaker is Sam Gindin. He retired from the CAW after 26 years of working there. He now teaches at York. Without further ado, I turn it over to him.
Thanks. I was teaching at York, but there's a strike on. If we're going to talk about a new political project, we have to be honest about what we're up against. What's so striking about capitalism is its increasing universalism. Its ability to be everywhere, expand into every corner of the globe, and every corner of our public and private lives. Taking capitalism on means thinking and dreaming just as big. It means identifying with equally universal but diametrically opposed belief in the human capacity to collectively construct an egalitarian and democratic world in which each of our potentials can be fully and mutually developed. It means, in the words of Latin American intellectual and activist Marta Harnacker, not reducing politics to the art of the possible, but magnifying it to the art of making the impossible possible. What can this conference contribute to that intimidating challenge? Can we come out of this weekend with at least a sense of a new beginning, a confidence that something is really going to happen? I would hope so, but I think it will depend on not just inspiring interventions from people at this conference, but also on actually agreeing to do all those mundane things that movements depend on. There's certainly no lack of issues around which we can build a broader movement. The world we confront today emerged out of a crisis a generation ago when the U.S. faced a threat to its economic supremacy, a loss of control abroad, highlighted by Vietnam, and a loss of legitimacy at home, exemplified by the civil rights movement, anti-war protests, a youth rebellion that included young factory workers, and a growing women's movement. The eventual American response, neoliberalism, reached wherever capitalism reached. What it delivered included the most grotesque increases in international and domestic inequality. For all the talk about family values, the actual experience of most working class families has involved more of their time sold in the labor market and intensified pressures and uncertainties at work at home. For all the emphasis on individualism, neoliberalism's commodification of everyday life has increasingly narrowed the scope of meaningful expressions of our individual potential. As for democratic aspirations, capitalism's national and international centralization of economic, social, and political power has, as the Seattle demonstrators emphasized to the world, subverted the content of popular control. The contradictions between ideology and reality, the criticism of capitalism's alleged successes, found no effective voice within existing mass political parties, whether social democratic or communist. After capitalism and its elites won the day, implemented their agenda, but then failed their own test of a general improvement in living standards, there was no effective challenge to their credibility or serious challenge to their authority as social leaders. We were unable to take advantage of their vulnerability and hold them accountable. So the political crisis that should have been on the right surfaced instead on the left. The problem isn't that there was any lack of courageous and creative opposition. The activities of OCAP are only one example of such resistance. Nor is it a matter of being more committed and trying harder. There's something much larger at stake here, and it's whether the political capacities we currently have can address the magnitude of what we face. The opposition that has occurred has surged and ebbed. Particular struggles came and receded. We've gone from one march and one event to another. After an impressive day of action in one community, we went on to another with little or no attention to how to continue to develop the base that had just been left behind. It hasn't been easy to make our gains and struggles cumulative rather than transitory, and we have not generally been able to extend the range and scale of our struggles. Unless we honestly come to grips with such limits, we risk not only coming up against barriers we can't overcome, but even dissipating the remarkable resistance that has carried us so far. So where does this take us? The argument that we should directly move to some kind of a new party is, I think, premature. Parties can't just be proclaimed. They can only emerge out of people in motion who have built a base of common experiences and trust. Even if, therefore, party building is seen as a future goal, the immediate issue has to be to develop ways of struggling together and creating the kind of movement that will then itself be the base for debating the if, when, and nature of an appropriate party. As for looking to revive the NDP, I see no reason to spend a great deal of time on this. The real leadership in developing a culture of resistance has, at least since the free trade debates, clearly shifted from the NDP to the unions and the coalitions. Though most of us would, I presume, continue to vote NDP given the options, our vision and our project, building a movement that changes how we think about politics, extending the range of what's possible, and considering a fundamental challenge to capitalism, is simply on a different terrain than that of the narrowly electoral NDP. When it comes to political practice and overall agenda, the movements and the NDP have come to speak different languages. The notion of a structured movement, less than a party, more than the coalitions, is a balancing act. It reflects the uncertainty within the left as a whole about what to do, and also a sensitivity to the autonomy of the various groups potentially involved. It doesn't hold out ready answers, and is transitional in the sense of emphasizing what we do now and leaving the future options and leaving the future open. But it does pose the challenge of addressing particular gaps in the left as it currently exists, above all as regards building a movement with new capacities, not just repeating our protests with the capacities we already have. How do we ensure that our struggles don't just come and go, but the experiences are gathered into something lasting? How do we create a whole that is more than the sum of its parts? How can we coordinate activity across groups? How can we combine thinking and doing? How do we interrupt the rush from one struggle to another and address what we otherwise never seem to find time for? The exchange of ideas about the overall direction of our struggles, the sharing of analyses of new developments, the honest evaluation of each other's efforts. How can we develop an alternative vision and come up with a series of themes that might unite groups and activate individuals not only in Toronto, but across the country? When we refer to these as capacities, we mean that they are potential skills and structures that can't simply be taken off a shelf, but need to be developed. Some of the skills are biased towards the technical and in the individual, such as writing, but most are also social, how to recruit, and collective, how to debate without it becoming personal, how to maximize democratic participation, how to work towards defining principles and evolving and testing strategies. The structures which must be discovered and developed include structures for communication, for education, democratic decision-making, and the carrying out of decisions. And all of this requires resources, not just for materials and meeting places, but also for paid organizers. Some people are nervous about structures and organizers, perhaps especially paid organizers. They seem to open the door to top-down control and bureaucratization. That caution, given the left's history, should obviously be taken seriously. Yet the fact is that we cannot build unity, coordinate activity, affect the political culture of the country, make democratic decisions, and build the kind of social power that can challenge capitalist power without structures and resources. The point, for example, of coordinating structures is not to replace the grassroots energy and spontaneity of particular groups, but to add the kind of support to each that will strengthen them while integrating these groups into broader activities that will strengthen the movement as a whole. What concretely might all of this mean for what emerges from this weekend? What follows are some ideas that have come up informally over coffee or running into people at various functions. The conference organizing committee may have other proposals, and in particular will address a process for deciding on a steering committee. First, it would seem that we need to develop a statement of what we are about, not a lengthy treatise, but a short explanation of what we mean by an anti-capitalist movement, how it integrates various concerns and oppressions, why we think this is essential at this moment in time, and what we see ourselves as actually doing. The statement would also be a central part of the outreach work of inspiring others to consider and join our movement. We would have to establish a process for how this will get written and how it will get discussed and endorsed. That would itself get us to establish closer working relationships amongst individuals and groups. Second, we need to establish a communication network, ranging from the internet to pamphlets on specific issues to a hard copy newsletter. This would provide general information, keep us up to date on each other's struggles and support solidarity work, and facilitate, especially in the newsletter but also via the internet, discussions and debates around events, analyses, and strategies. The pamphlets would try to develop a style of writing about complex issues that is accessible while not patronizing. The reality of Canada implies that the development of any kind of structural movement will of necessity begin as a series of regional movements. One issue of communications will therefore be this regional dimension. First, how to maintain some contact to encourage heading in a similar overall direction, and later, something that goes far beyond communication. How to develop such regional movements into a truly national movement. We might therefore begin by simply sharing newsletters and exchanging delegations to conferences. Third, though communication overlaps with education, it would be useful to put together a series of educational forums on broad issues crucial to getting a handle on current capitalism. Is the nation-state a victim of globalization or its author? What kind of democratic reforms can we get from a capitalist state? What's the relationship between globalization and neoliberalism? What's the relationship between industrial capital and financial capital? Is there an international capitalist class? Is the new economy really new? Where's the labor movement heading? How do we address the growing inequalities within the working class? Can women lead the fight for a redistribution of work time? Are we in Canada benefiting from the low wages in the third world? What is the impact of the international mobility of labor and immigration on racism and movement unity? How has neoliberalism affected the intersection of gender, race, and class? How do we reconcile the need for third world growth with environmental pressures? What kind of international solidarity is most effective? What's the role of municipal politics in the present context? What kind of struggles can be both local and national at the same time? What are the economic and political implications of a crash? But forums, while they might stimulate ideas, are not enough. We need to also develop a more localized political space. In various historical periods, workers in the developed countries, workers and peasants in Latin America, and more recently, the women's movement, set up smaller meetings organized around neighborhood or work. Such groups were politically active locally, but they also integrated reading groups and study circles into their activity, developing a crucial foundation for national movements and politics. What can we learn from this experience? Fourth, we will need a process for developing more specific alternatives and themes that might unite our separate activities, both locally and eventually nationally. For example, democratization of the state, democratic control over finance, mobilization around a particular social program like the right to affordable housing or childcare. And fifth, as we emphasized earlier, building a structured movement implies some resources. While we can do with donations for the time being, some discussion should begin about the eventual need for a due structure. The main point about a due structure is obviously the necessary money, but dues are also a measure of commitment to the project. So let me conclude. When the right tells us that there is no alternative, it may very well be that at a certain level, they're right. A humane alternative within the present system may in fact not be possible. But what they're really telling us is that we can only achieve our goals through moving on to a radical challenge to the system by developing a politics that is explicitly anti-capitalist. We can't wait for that kind of politics to be put before us by others. There are no others. If the dominant mood is, it's a great idea, call me when it takes off, then it simply won't happen. What we're attempting is simply too big, too difficult, and too much, unless the commitment on the part of people like those in this room is equally deep and ready. I'm really excited, and I really look forward to the discussions. Thanks.